Good morning. I'd like to invite everyone to have a seat. Proceed our board meeting with a staff briefing by the fund manager, Candace Powers. Candace?
Good morning. Thank you, Keith. Nice to see all of the board members again. This is a funding meeting. This is the second trimester. This closes up the second trimester of fiscal year 2016. On page 1-1-1, it includes all the projects. They're indicated in yellow in your board package. Those will be the ones that we will be discussing for. On 1-1-2, you can see that the fund balance looks adequate. That's always nice, considering that the price of oil is substantially down. The price of commodities is down. This board, for the first time, has received more revenue from loan repayments than from new revenue. And that's from good stewardship by the members of this board. So I appreciate what you do and your careful and thoughtful consideration of applications as they come in. There are several things in your red folder. There's a new agenda page. It's three-hole punched. You can just put that in place of the old one. There are also two new note sheet pages that can be included in the back of your meeting notes. A list of new applications that just came in for the third trimester of fiscal year 2016. You'll notice that there are 13, I believe, for about $38 million in requests. You can look at those. There's a mark your calendars document. That's for you to fill out and return to Chris Reed. It's concerning the policy meeting in June, which will be in Monticello. Is that correct, Commissioner Adams?
That's correct. Thank you.
So please fill that out. Indicate how many people will be there. You have a bright pink document. That's the meeting schedule as it stands today. There are also in the red folder SHPO comments concerning the bluff applications that you will be discussing today. SHPO is aware of it. They've given their concurrence. So all things with state historic preservation appear to be in order. There's a Long Valley information sheet, a change of the scope of work. They'll discuss that when they get here, but that's just concerning a request to use some of the funding to build a replacement shed for the one that, an older one that was removed in this project. Also, there are the regional planning reports from the AOG planners that are around the state. Those are submitted to you on a trimester basis at each funding meeting, so you can know what the regional planners are doing. The projects that will probably require a bit of discussion today are under supplemental funding, the two bluff ones. That's what the State Historic Preservation document was about. They've had some excitement as they pursued this project, the East Bluff and the West Bluff projects that were flood mitigation. The board, this is the one, if you recall, was the Chinese menu, do it right. Well, they did it right and ended up in a mass grave, so they need a little extra funding in order to monitor that and make it appropriate for archaeological reasons. There's also, under special consideration, which does require a vote of the board to hear, but it is Castledale City. You funded them in 2015 for this new city hall. There were three entities that were going into this building. Those three entities have created an entity that will actually be taking out the loans. So what you will be doing here is just authorizing them to come in under Castledale Building Commission. That will be the entity that takes out the loan for this project that you've already approved. The Long Valley one, I already discussed that just a little bit. It's the lagoon and collection system improvements for 2013. This is just to use some of it because it was just, it wasn't in the scope of work to build this small storage building. They would like to use some of that, and that does require board approval because it's a change in the scope of work. And then when we get to the board member discussions, that will be up to the chairman. And that's today's meeting.
Thank you, Candace. That was a brief briefing. We appreciate all you and your staff do. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the funding meeting for the second trimester of the Community Impact Board. We're glad you all made it, especially considering the weather. Hopefully, or I guess fortunately, most of us don't come from the west where the storm is coming from, so it could be worse. Please remember, if you haven't, to sign in there by the back door. We want to make sure that we know you're here. At this point, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the January 7th meeting.
Introduction?
Oh, yeah. We could do that.
Chairman, I will move for approval with one correction, and it is on 214. Under number 2, Ashley Valley. Second paragraph, it's just a spelling error. Third line should be indicated instead of whatever that word is.
Indicted.
We have a motion from Commissioner Jarrett with one minor indictment.
Second that indictment.
Thank you, Mr. Zanotti. Any other comments or corrections? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Well, that was a very important thing. Now we'll move on to more important things. Introductions. Let's see. We'll start with you, Mr. Hardy.
Jonathan Hardy, Director of Housing and Community Development.
Gail Gardner with the State of Utah. I'm the Associate Fund Manager for the Community Impact Fund.
Tom Roberts with the Attorney General's Office. I act as legal advisor to the board.
Claudia Jarrett, Sampy County Commissioner, representing 6th County AOG.
Ron Winterton, Duchesne County Commission, representing the Unibasin AOG.
Bruce Adams, San Juan County Commission, representing Southeastern Utah AOG.
David Damshin, State Treasurer, ex officio board member.
Good morning. My name is Keith Heaton. I'm chairman of the board with the Housing and Community Development Division.
Candace Powers, Fund Manager, Permanent Community Impact Fund, Housing and Community Development.
Jay Potter, Carbon County Commissioner, representing Carbon County.
Good morning. Nagi Zanotti from sunny St. George, Robert N., representing UDOT Commission.
Steve Farrell, representing the Board of Water Resources.
Jim Mattson, Kane County Commission, representing Five County Association of Governments.
Good morning. Mike McKee, Uinta County Commissioner, representing Uinta County.
Greg Galecki, representing Water Quality Board.
No.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. We'll save the rest of you the pain of going through that, and not to mention Shad West over in the corner. If we have any audio or difficulties, we blame Shad whether they're his fault or not. And generally, they're not. We appreciate you all being here. This is a funding meeting. What we will attempt to do is lump several of these projects together in one motion. I'll review each project, and at an appropriate place, I will ask for a motion. Generally, we'll lump them into groups of 3 to 6 or so. So just so you kind of have a feel for the way the flow is going to go. If there are particular questions about a project, we may invite the applicant to come forward and discuss those. Generally, that is not necessary. So hopefully you can just sit back and relax at this meeting, unlike the last meeting you attended. The first project is Carbon County Municipal Building Authority. It's for new soccer fields, restrooms, parking lot, et cetera. It's a $552,500 grant. The second project is for the San Juan County Municipal Building Authority for a multi-use health group building. It's a total of $4.5 million with $1,500,000 30-year at 1.5% loan and a $3 million grant. Project number three is for the town of Henryville. It is an equipment purchase of a tractor backhoe and a security system for the fire station. It's a $60,000 grant. The fourth project is for Mona City Local Building Authority, a new community center, $358,000 total request with $180,000 at 20 years, 2.5% loan, and $178,000 grant. At this point, the chair will accept a motion to approve those four projects as presented.
So moved.
We have a motion by Commissioner Winterton and a second by Mr. Zanotti. Any discussion? Mr. Roberts.
Mr. Chairman, since you are...
Mr. Roberts, you need to pull your mic down. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, since you are taking these as a group vote, I would note that there might be some of the board members who want to abstain on some of the votes.
That's interesting.
I'm not sure how you want to handle that in terms of being able to identify them in the group rather than going individually through each project.
Excellent point. With the motion and the second in place, are there any abstainings from any of those four projects?
I'll abstain from the Carbon County MBA.
Please note that Commissioner Potter has abstained from the first project number one.
I'll abstain from project number two, even though I have no personal financial interest in the project.
Thank you. Commissioner Adams is abstaining from number two. Any other abstentions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. There's a change in the next two projects. Those were originally presented as the Hurricane Valley Fire Special Service District. The actual applicant, Candace, is Washington County Municipal Building Authority.
Yes.
Project number five is a new fire station at Coral Canyon West. $1.5 million total request with $1 million 30-year 2.5% loan and a $500,000 grant. The project number six, again, there's a change there. It's now Washington County Municipal Building Authority rather than the Hurricane Valley Fire Special Service District. New fire truck at Leverkin, $995,000 20-year at 2.5% loan. The chair will entertain a motion for those two projects.
I'll make that motion.
We have a motion by Commissioner Potter. Is there
I'll second it.
Oh, boy, we have a race over here. We'll give that to Councilman Farrell. Any abstentions? Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The next project is number seven on your list, Duchesne County Special Service District for road improvements at the Arcadia Road, $2.5 million grant. And project number eight is the Fruitland Special Service District's Annexation Feasibility Study, a $10,000 grant. The chair will entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Thank you. Commissioner Adams, is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Potter has the second. It's a good race. Are there any abstentions? Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Those two projects carry. Project number 9 has been withdrawn. For your information, I was advised that they had adequate money when the bids came in, a little bit less than they expected, and so they did not need our assistance, but this project will proceed nonetheless. So seems like a win-win to me. Project number 10 is the town of Circleville. Excuse me, please.
Question on that.
I'm hoarse anyway.
The funding there would just go back into the pool.
Goes into the pool.
Reallocated.
Yes. Thank you for that question. Project number 10, Town of Circleville for road improvements. $500,000 total request with $250,000 being a 10-year, 2.5% loan and $250,000 being a grant. Next project, number 11, is Vernal City water and sewer utility improvements. $1,866,376 with $933,000 at 30 years at 0% and $933,376 as a grant. Project number 12 is the Ashley Valley Water and Sewer Improvements at 10th South and 1350 West, $500,000 total with $250,000 30-year 2.5% loan and a $250,000 grant. The chair will entertain a motion on those two projects.
I so move.
Sold.
We're going to have to be fast now.
Commissioner Mattson, second.
Second.
Commissioner Winterton, any abstentions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Project number 13, Castle Valley Special Service District. They're just calling it the consolidated capital projects that we see every year. It's $1,945,000 with $1,000,000 6 years at 2.5% interest loan and a $945,000 grant. Project number 14 is Enoch City Storm Drain Plan, $10,000 grant. Project number 15 is Ephraim City Water System Improvements Culinary Pipe Replacement. $692,000 with $346,000 25-year 2.5% loan and a $346,000 grant. Project number 16, Smithfield City City Master Plan, $64,400 grant. Kane County Municipal Building Authority, new multipurpose civic complex, $3,085,000 total request with $2,200,000 30-year 2% loan and an $885,000 grant.
Mr. Chairman, I will recuse on the Kane County project.
Thank you. Any other abstentions?
I make a motion to approve the.
Thank you, Mr. Zanotti.
Thank you.
Second.
Commissioner Jarrett with the second. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That carries. Are we doing okay so far, Candace?
Yep.
Okay.
Are we going too fast?
Fast,
yeah. We need a break.
We don't want to go too fast for anybody, but we don't want to go too slow either. It's kind of the Goldilocks speed, just right. Project number 18, Uinta Transportation Special Service District. They requested a scope of work change as well as a supplement of $685,000. Project number 19, Iron County Municipal Building Authority, Safety Services Building. This was a supplement of $700,000 at 25 years, 2.5% loan. And then Spring City came in for an additional $575,000. $285,000 of that was at 30 years, 2.5% loan, and $290,000 as a grant. The chair will entertain a motion for those three projects.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner McKee. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Galecki. Any abstentions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, let's see. We're on part 4, number 1, Bluff Special Service District. I guess they ran into some archaeological issues, and that's going to require some additional funding in the amount of $139,555.
From both.
And then there's part four, number two, Bluff Special Service District. The previous project was on the West Bluff Project. This is on the East Bluff Project, revising the scope of work. And they're also requesting additional funding of $171,452. Does the board feel a need to call the people from Bluff to come forward and talk about this, or are we comfortable with what's going on? We'd like to invite you guys.
We ask them to come up.
All right. Why don't you come forward and tell us a little bit about what's going on out there in Big Beautiful Bluff? It seems you're not the first ones to live in Bluff. Please make sure you introduce yourselves for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Rick Reeve. I'm the chairman of the Bluff Service Area.
Bill Babaz with Tetra Tech, the engineer.
Please proceed.
Let's start on the west side of Bluff first. We were given the approval, I think back in 2015, to start a project on the west Bluff area. We started construction, set up out to bid, got a contractor, Jackson Excavation, and started our construction on the north side of the road, and which is proceeding quite long. Matter of fact, I think they're finished with that this week. When they went ahead and started on our south side of the road, they started at our farthest point, the discharge section of the system, and we were aware, after the approval of your board to proceed, back when we initially initiated the project, that there was an archaeological site to the west of where we were proposing our digging. So we start digging out on the, I believe, the 23rd of December, got approval from the neighbor to start a road, and good Lord, we found a site of human remains. I think a total of seven were discovered there, at which point we stopped all construction, contacted Chippo and y'all, and we now have an archaeological plan to continue the construction from the Bajo Archaeological group. So that's where we are with the western section. As I said, there was a fairly extensive area there, and they do have planted as part of the archaeological work that I believe the Chippo people have approved. They will be doing some testing of the soils at Augreen every, I think, 6 meters to make sure there's no other archaeological sites in the line of our drain line on that side. On the further south of the road, further east, though, where our construction comes across 191, we will have to have a monitor all the digging as we dig in the trenches.
So is State Historic Preservation Office, are they the ones who provided these estimates, or are these from your contractor? How exactly does that work, and how do we move forward?
A little bit of both. The Chippo didn't really, they approved the, it's called a Bajo Archaeological, it's an archaeological study group actually residing in Bluff. They were contacted immediately and attended a meeting, I believe, with Chris, I forgot, is that Matthews or something of that nature?
Merritt.
And they inspected the site, had the people from the state come down, remove the remains, and he designed an excavation plan to work for the project. Upon getting that, his information, what was required from an archaeological standpoint, they then contacted our excavator and had him decide how much additional time was involved due to the monitoring of the digging of the trenching and whatnot.
So the State History Preservation Office has given you authorization to proceed with this plan?
Yes, they have.
Okay.
I believe they have.
Mr. Roberts?
The information is 2 days ago.
Okay.
That they didn't send it to Canvas.
Do you have additional information?
It's been a while, I guess, since we've all had one of these types of cases, and so we kind of short circuit and don't realize what it is that's being involved, what the law requires. Initially, with regard to this project, And under your rules, any project that goes forward, if they discover any archaeological or historic remains or historic artifacts, they're required to stop work, come back to this board for further approval. Frequently what will happen is that in working with SHPO, the SHPO will be able to come up with a plan with, it's the applicant's obligation to come up with a plan as to how they're going to proceed forward. Usually they can come up with a plan where there's no adverse effect. So they're able to avoid disturbing the site, disturbing the cultural resources, disturbing the heritage. And with a finding of no adverse effect, since it's your duty to take into account the effect of the project on the historic resources, you let it go forward. The problem here is that I think that there is a finding of adverse effect, which requires mitigation and more of a formal plan, which is something that the applicant should be coming forward with. The SHPO does not give approval. He doesn't have the authority to say no. The SHPO provides technical advice. As you'll note in your letter, he says we concur with the project's effect and eligibility. That means he concurs with the determination that this is an eligible site for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. Concurring with the project's effect, presumably that is, it's an adverse effect. So then the question becomes, what do you do as a board with regard to a project of yours that is going to have an adverse effect on cultural resources? And you must take into account that effect before you authorize further work. And unfortunately, I played phone tag yesterday with Mr. Merritt. Didn't actually get to speak with him. In reviewing the email correspondence, which was part of the original packet, there were some concerns raised, and I didn't see anything in there where there was an agreement with regard to this is how we're going forward, and it will have no adverse effect on the cultural resources. That may be the case. I don't have that. There is the continuing duty, which they had before, to have a monitor on site with regard to archaeological resources, because this is an archaeologically rich environment. So it may be, I just haven't seen that they have a plan that SHPO has said either one, there's no adverse effect, or two, agree that this is an appropriate remediation of the problem, so the board could say, we're going to adopt that as well and say, okay, it's okay to go forward because we've taken into account based upon your representations and the professional analysis of SHPO. So I apologize for not having all the data information, but sort of asking the question, do you have that kind of documentation and agreement with SHPO and a plan going forward concerning adverse effects?
No, the information I have from SHPO is a memo dated the 26th, which is the one that was presented.
Yes.
Now, the Bajo archaeological study that they presented to both the CIB and I think Jensen's presented that to Mr. Matthews does state that it doesn't say anything about the adverse archaeological impact. I wasn't aware of that. But that being said, what they were trying to do is in the area where they have discovered the remains is to have digging potholes. I will call them potholes. They excavate down every 6 meters in order to make sure that there is no additional ruins or artifacts in the line of our pipeline. That's what I'm aware of.
That type of activity with regard to showing, making sure that there are no further archaeological resources might result in no adverse effect unless they find one. Then they've got to stop again and go through that process.
May I?
Let's go to Commissioner McKee and then Mr. Glecky.
Just a thought on the project. I mean, Tom's absolutely right. We do need to meet all the archaeological conditions there. But I'm wondering if we couldn't approve this subject to the proper approvals from the archaeologists so that we approve it conditional upon the proper documentation that meets the archaeological requirements.
Let's hold that thought and go to Mr. Galecki.
It's basically along same lines as that. Did SHPO authorize the mitigation plan from Arapaho or is it Abajo?
Per this letter on the 26th, the SHPO concurs with the project's effect and eligibility, provided the use of cultural resource monitor and preemptive listing regimen. We also support additional money for the project to help close the loop on the archaeological issues. And it was a rather extensive, I think it was included from Abajo as to their monitoring of the system and what they decided and what they will, what will be done if they do discover additional artifacts. The project will be stopped, and then there's a more intensive investigation on those remains or structures that will be discovered along the way where they're doing the potholes.
So it is. So you have the same documentation, is that right, Tom? And in on your counsel, it doesn't sound like that SHPO gave authorization for a mitigation plan.
I mean, as I indicated, SHPO doesn't have the authority to give authorization to proceed. They don't have the authorization to say stop. The historic preservation laws require governmental entities to stop and take into account the effect of their actions on these historic resources. One of the main purposes of the law is actually to allow the public to find, get notice that some historic resource is about to be damaged so they can raise the political will and raise the question to the governmental officials, should you go forward, isn't there a better way to do this without having to destroy the historic resources? The historic preservation laws do not keep entities from destroying historic resources, cultural resources. And the issue comes down to your duty as a board to take that into account.
And I guess one of the things that I was thinking is that was a, is a realignment possible or was it considered?
At current, it's a consideration if they do discover more of the remains. And as I recall, I believe that we were asked by the CIB group to provide an archaeological survey, I'll call it, from the Abajo group in conjunction with the SHPO people, Chris Matthews. And they did put that together, and we submitted to CIB, and they then presented that plan to the SHPO group.
Candace, can you shed some light on this?
The plan that the BIHO put together is in your packet. You received that. It is a monitoring plan. I did contact Chris Merritt and asked him further if this letter was a concurrence. He said that is what they will provide. He says that is sufficient. That and going forward, we just need to monitor it. So this is his letter saying, please continue to monitor. He didn't say it was an adverse effect or no adverse effect, and he won't. Mm-hmm. But going forward, he requires that. He would like to require, like Tom says, he can't make you do anything. But this board can withhold funding to provide certainty that no archaeological find is disturbed or damaged. But I think that's the intent of Bluff, is to see that that also occurs. But they can't proceed. It will cost them more money to be that cautious, and that's why they're before the board.
Mr. Damson? I just wanted to ask a question, Mr. Chair. References made in our packet to this final report that's available tentatively on May 1st, 2016, following completion of field work. This report to be submitted to this board, the SHPO, and the BSA. What are the pros, cons, prudence, or otherwise in deferring or waiting on this decision until that final report is made available?
Can you answer that, Vic?
I'm not exactly sure what you're asking.
If we can hold off on making the approval of the project to go forward until the final report.
Without the approval of some funding, I don't know that we can afford to actually start the Abajo project with that, just due to the funding that we have currently in the service area board, if that's what you're asking.
Would you be amenable to providing a more regular report?
Definitely. The first thing that will occur, once we have approval, they will have their archaeologists go and do the pothole studies. That's the very first thing that will be happening on the project. And based on either the discovery or non-discovery, the project was going to proceed. It's my understanding that if anything was discovered, the project will stop again and more investigations will occur. And we would gladly provide you a week-to-week, a weekly update if that's what you'd like.
Thank you. Further questions, Commissioner Jarrett?
Yeah, my question is, so if it stopped again, does that mean more money? Does that mean you have to come back again for additional money for whatever?
I'm afraid, yes. We have our excavators on site with their equipment. And as you can see, there's an additional fees from them because of the new additional delays in their construction speed. As under my understanding, instead of digging at the normal rate and laying the pipe, they now have an archaeological monitor with them on the backhoes, digging at a very short distance to make sure that no remains are discovered. So there is a delay involved. If we discontinue work, we'll have equipment sitting on site, and there will be a charge for downtime on the equipment. Because the work north of the highway is completed.
She's asking if this is approved, you can need more action.
Oh, well, this is approved. I hope not. I don't believe so, because, as I said, the Abajo fees are all involved, and the excavator feels that this is the worst case scenario. And the reality is that if they do not discover any remains, the on-site person that is overseeing the digging of the trenches will allow them to proceed a little faster, which should shorten up the time frame, then we should have extra monies to return.
Okay. The other question I have is on the detail. It was $1,250 for land rights of way and water rights. So are you going out of the scope of the original project?
No, that was the that was the only line that we had available to put some information. That's for a staking of the easements and things that were disturbed, and some question about the easements down along the line there, and to reestablish the endpoints from the digging. Yeah, for the property plot plans and everything.
So why is that in addition to what was originally requested, I guess is my question.
I don't think we knew that we needed that in the original funding request. This is something that's come up since the project started, and the landowners would like their property pins replaced.
Okay. It seems like an exorbitant amount, too, in engineering and other things. Like 64% of the project is just in pre-construction engineering. Why the additional there? Is that just to cover? I mean, I would think that the project is the digging and the additional time with that contractor, but 64% and 25% in construction studies seems like a large amount of what we're funding in addition.
That's for engineering that's been completed. Tetra Tech completed that at risk, if you will. The hope was to get the engineering done so we could get the project into construction. Depending on where the bids came in, there may have been enough money that we wouldn't have had to ask for additional funding. Unfortunately, that didn't work out that way. But the engineering is complete. We don't anticipate any additional engineering.
So you're requesting reimbursement on funding that's already been completed?
Right. And that was based on conversations with Bluff Service Area.
Commissioner McKee.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion on this, if I could.
Please.
I would move that we approve this, but we approve it subject to sign off with the appropriate people and that's presented to staff before the funds release. So that whether that's SHPO, whatever group that is, I assume this is SITLA property. Is that what I read in there?
No, this is on private property.
This is private property. But in any case, that you get authorization through the appropriate, with the mitigation plan, whatever that might be, not be presented to staff before the funds are released.
Did that motion include a monthly report to staff, or to the board through staff?
Is that needed? If it is, it could. If that would be, if there's any.
No.
I don't know that it needs to.
Okay.
As long as the plan is approved.
Very well. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
Mr. Farrell seconds the motion. Further discussion or questions? Mr. Roberts?
Your Honor, I would. Your Honor, excuse me.
Thanks, Tom.
Promotion.
Mr. Chairman.
I should have changed out of my bathrobe this morning. I apologize.
I think that's an appropriate way for the board to continue, but in terms of the particular detail and the wording of it, the best way to go forward would be that it would be approved subject to a staff a recommendation from SHPO and staff being able to determine that there is no adverse effect with regard to the project going forward, and that to the extent that there was any adverse effect previously, that that would be a matter of mitigation that would come up later. But in terms of going forward, as long as there is a plan in place so that the SHPO can concur and staff can make the determination that there's no adverse effect, that would be appropriate.
That was the detail that I meant in the motion.
Perfect. I knew there was some detail that we didn't hear.
And that's the detail I meant to that
second. Anything further?
<Yeah. coughs> I'm just wondering who on our staff is qualified to make those judgments.
Well, actually, the SHPO is making the judgment that there's no adverse effect and just reporting.
So you're just gonna have staff work with SHPO to make those determinations?
And if you should come back and say there is still an adverse effect, then we would bring that before
okay.
the board.
All right. It sounded to me like we were going to have Candace get her archaeology degree and start making some determinations.
I think it's more a function of staff consulting with our attorney relative to has it met the statute
right.
relative to our responsibility under CIB. So not that we understand the plan and whatever, it's just that
right.
it is there.
Oh, but I know a bone when I see one.
Greg, did you
not to prolong this, but I guess it's a question for Tom. When it says there's no adverse effect, I mean, does that have to be a determination? Can't there be effects, but that if they're mitigated?
Yeah, there are two possible tracks, and the one track is if there's no adverse effect, then you don't have to take into account no adverse effect. So you're allowed to make the project go forward. If you don't want the staff to make the determination, you can bring it back to the board, and the board can make the determination with regard to no lack of adverse effect, because you are deemed as the entity to have the expertise. If there is an adverse effect going forward, then it's your duty to take into account and weigh whether or not that going forward with the project justifies the adverse effect on the historic remains. That's a policy decision for the governmental entity to decide. So the idea of, you know, presumably they've got a plan going forward where there will be no adverse effect going forward. And so don't hold the project up for that. If there is going to be adverse effect, this board probably ought to take a particular look at that and say, yes, we reviewed that, and this project is important enough, we're going to allow for the destruction or adverse effect on these historic resources.
Unfortunately, there could be an adverse effect on a project that we've already funded and they've trenched to a certain
right.
point. So
mm-hmm. okay. we're seeing an adverse
that way
effect
as well.
To the tune of $250,000.
Amen. All right. Call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries.
Thank you. I will take it upon myself to submit to Candace a bi-weekly report as to our progress, anything we do discover to help the board out.
Much appreciated.
I will continue to inform the board on this project.
So
thank you, gentlemen.
Does that include the East Bluff
section? You have your funding for both projects, yes.
Thank you so much.
The next item, number five, special consideration. There are two projects. One is Castledale City and the other is Long Valley Sewer. The chair will entertain a motion to consider the special considerations.
So moved.
A motion by Mr. Zanotti.
Second.
Is there a second? Second by Mr. Farrell. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the Castledale City special consideration. Is this just a name change, Candace?
Yes.
Okay.
Entity change.
Entity change.
You're authorizing the funding now for Castledale Building Commission. Just moving funding already authorized and authorizing it for this entity.
I'll make a motion to approve the name change or the entity change.
We have a motion by Commissioner Adams.
Second.
We have a second by Commissioner Winterton. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The Long Valley Sewer Improvement District. This is a scope of work change. They, I guess, need a small storage building to the tune of $80,000. They're not asking for additional money, as I understand it, just a change in the scope of work to allow this additional construction. Is there a motion?
I so move.
Commissioner Mattson moves. Is there a second? Commissioner Winterton seconds. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. That's very good. Item number six is board member discussion. The first item under board member discussion is a report on the Six County Infrastructure Coalition. And I believe Commissioner McKee, you wanted to address some issues with this?
I guess, let me just take a minute on that. Just as we are aware, we funded $5 million, when was this, about a year or so ago to?
2014.
In 2014, to help with the Six County Infrastructure Coalition. There's a lot of good things that's been happening with that, and I'm just wondering if we, as Senator Oakland is here, I believe he's still here, I'm wondering if it'd be all right if we could just have him come up, give just a slight report, a couple minutes, as to kind of some of the things that we've been able to do with the Six County Infrastructure Coalition, if that would be.
Yes, Senator Oakland, please come forward and have a seat. Welcome.
Maybe Eric Johnson could come up as well, if that would be all right, and just give a little report of some of the things that we've been involved in.
Senator Oakland, we appreciate you making time to be here. We know it's a very busy season for you, and you're probably making some sacrifices, so we appreciate your attention to this.
Thanks. Great to be with you. It's always good to be with this board. Thanks for all the great work that you do. I don't think there's any place in the state that we do more good for rural Utah than you guys do right here on this board, so thanks for your efforts. Thank you, Commissioner McKee. I would just give a brief update on the coalition, which was formed really a little bit over a year ago. So we're still kind of a fledgling organization, but I think that we've made tremendous progress in this nearly a year that we have been formed and are actually moving forward. And in a few months, we're going to have a study completed that we're using some of the money that was allotted to the coalition to be able to provide a study that would look at the opportunities in the eastern part of the state, in that part of the state where the resources are being produced and extracted, and where most of the CIV money actually comes from, those mineral lease projects that are out there. So we're looking at all of the opportunities that we may have, trying to make sure that we have a planning process in place where we can prioritize the needs of what that area has, and then be able to move forward on being able to make them economically viable and continue to have the opportunity to produce and be a strong economic force in the state. So as you know, we are moving forward with our first project that this board funded as well, the Buck Cliff Transmission Line project. We are trying to work as quickly as we can through the legal issues and making sure that we have everything in place to be able to move forward with that project. In the meantime, we've started looking at the engineering, started working on the engineering to be able to get that project work up and working. So it's been a kind of a interesting challenge for us, and we know that there has been some discussion with the board as to how that project is moving forward. I can tell you that that it is moving forward, and we're well on our way to being able to get that project actually in construction, we think, we hope, in the next few months. So that's kind of a brief introduction. We have looked at other potential projects that we may have out there. I think our intent is to, at some point in time, have projects in place with loans and revenue sources that we can be self-sustaining on as many of those projects as we can. We've looked at opportunities for federal funding. We have looked at private partnerships, public-private partnerships out there that we think are going to be a real option for us. There's a lot of interest in the state of Utah because of what we do. There's a lot of interest in the types of projects that we could be looking at for the coalition from private investors. They have a lot of money. There's a lot of money out there for good projects, and especially the kinds of projects that we will be looking at, and we're just getting all kinds of interest from investors from around the country who would be interested as we get into these projects and start looking at them. We have nothing in particular to report at this time on those projects, but we're waiting for our study to finish so that we can prioritize some of the needs that we have out there that will best fit the area. That's a brief update.
So, Senator, help me remember, this board has made two different loans, grants to the Infrastructure Coalition. The first was for $5 million, and that was for basically an eastern Utah inventory of facilities and infrastructure, correct?
That's correct, and that's where the study that we're working on now, that's what we're using that for.
Okay, and then there was a second grant loan, I don't remember the details, that was for the transmission line. Okay.
Correct.
So those are the only two projects that this board has funded for the Infrastructure Coalition.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zanotti.
Senator, good morning.
Good morning.
Do you still have those nine original partners in online? They're still supporting you, or they are dropped off, or any of them added recently?
I missed part of the question. Would you repeat?
Well, you had nine original partners that they were helping you, supporting for the transmission line.
Yes.
Are they still online with you, or there's any new partners added up to those nine originals?
Because of the downturn in prices, there are a number of those original partners that we had thought we were going to be there have pulled out of the project. But we have been told, and we are relying on the information that the other remaining, and Eric might have a better idea of how many partners we still have there, but we do have their guarantee of their participation in the project, and the money that has come from the CIB, we know that we're leveraging that with that private partnership with those partners, and the ones that are left are guaranteeing that match. That if you'll remember, there was a 50% or 25% grant, 25% match, and then 50% loan. And so we are actually moving forward with the money coming from private funding the work that we're doing right now. We haven't sent any request for funding back to the staff yet.
And what if they pulled off, and do you have a guarantee that you're not going to come back at CIB more money because now you have four partners rather than nine?
Yeah, if that happens, the project, we would obviously have to pull out, and the efforts that we put into the project would have to be borne by those guaranteed partners that we have in place at this point.
Thank you, Senator.
Commissioner Winterton?
I was just going to go back and clarify for sure. The $5 million that we gave the coalition to start with was for the study, but also for the administration, the staff of the coalition, right?
Yeah.
I thought that that was clear, that that was part of the operations of it. In my mind, it was the same thing as what we've done with the rural planners, is that we don't keep going back and criticizing or critiquing what they turn in, that what they submit, you know, they're subject to an audit, state audit. And so I think for with that, I want the board to understand that that's what we did motion and approve, is that the operation of the coalition doesn't have to have Mother May I to get the bills paid. That if they submit it, staff pays the bills, and that's what I thought we had clarified at the time that we had given the first $5 million. I know we've had a little problem with that, so I would just like that on the record, that we did motion to do that.
So, Senator, what was the breakdown on the funding for that first project?
I'm going to have Eric.
Yeah, if I could, my recollection is that the initial funding was approved in September of 2014, and then the coalition came back to this board. It was either in March or April of 2015.
It was April.
Thank you. To clarify that that the $5 million not only involved the planning and the infrastructure study, but also administration, and the contract was modified at that time to expressly state that it included administration. Mm-hmm. I believe that at that time also some numbers were talked about in, my recollection is approximately $2 million for administration and $3 million for the planning study.
Candace whispered in my ear, that's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
If I could just make
Commissioner McKee,
and Eric, if you would just remember, would you just explain to the board, you know, our auditing procedures, the things that we do at Six County, you know, so that it's clear, you know, as to what happens at Six County Organization, meeting all the requirements of auditing procedures and those kind of things, if you would.
Sure. Yes. All expenditures of the coalition have been presented to the coalition board and approved. Seth Ovison, the county clerk auditor for Carbon County, acts as the finance director for the coalition and has always presented all expenditures to the coalition board. They are approved by the board and then, you know, submitted to the community impact board up until this time in a reimbursement process. The policies... The coalition has approved policies and procedures. They were approved in December of 2014. They were modified last month on procurement. And even in places where, in theory, the executive director could approve an expense, those expenses have still always been presented to the coalition board. So the policy in some places allow... for example, ongoing expenses. Let's say there was a utility bill that the coalition had on a monthly basis. That could be approved just by the executive director without coming to the coalition board. Regardless, every expense has always come to the coalition board.
And then, Eric, if you would just also mention our auditing, you know, what we set up as far as auditing.
Yeah, and at the end of 2015, because expenditures for the coalition had exceeded more than $500,000 in 2015, then in December of 2015, the coalition board approved a full audit, governmental audit for the coalition. And my understanding is that Mr. Ovison has proceeded forward to identify an auditor and get that underway.
So is that currently underway or just... in process of getting underway?
You know, I have to admit that since that approval in December, I haven't been involved in the details, and so I can't speak for it.
But the coalition board did authorize an audit.
Yes, by resolution, it was unanimously approved.
Does the coalition, do they have public meetings?
Yes.
Okay.
They're typically held monthly. Our prime location is in Price, Utah, the first Friday of each month at 10 a.m. However, on some months like February, because of the legislative session, we will be meeting today, Thursday, at 5:30 here in this room. So today at 5:30, if anyone wants to attend, we'll be meeting here.
Well, you have a long day ahead of you.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
So I am aware that there have been some issues with pay requests being delayed or withheld by the staff, state staff. And, you know, my understanding is that some of this has been because this is a new organization developing policies and procedures, auditing procedures, and those type of things. I sense that there are still some issues with that. Are you aware of what those issues are?
Some have been brought to my attention. Again, Mr. Ovison is the person who primarily handles that. They've only been brought to my attention where it was thought that I could perhaps assist, for example, by providing the adopted policies and procedures and the adopted budgets that the coalition has approved. The coalition board has approved both at the end of 2014 and 2015. But I haven't necessarily been involved in all of the details as to why any particular request may or may not.
And Senator Oaklander, are you aware of outstanding requests that need to be resolved?
Let me say it. We are a new organization, and we understand that that trying to work through these issues and make sure that we're complying with the rules and regulations of being reimbursed for these expenses has been a challenge for staff because we are new. And so we want you to know that the staff has worked very well and tried to resolve these issues. We've met several times, and we think that we have most of those issues worked out. I do know that there has been some question, especially on Mr. Johnson's requests, where we have an attorney-client privilege, the coalition. There has been some detail requested on some of his submittals that may violate that attorney-client privilege. And so there may be some information that the state is asking for that we have to, with attorney-client privilege and some of the things that we're working on, we have to be careful what we say. And so I know that is still a little bit of an issue. And we continue to try to work through how we do that.
Is there assistance needed from the board to facilitate that, or is that working itself out?
I think it's working itself out. Again, it's just something that we're just new enough. I think we have to continue to work with the Division of Finance and be able to find a way to get these things paid in a timely manner. I do think we have most of the issues resolved on payment of submittals from our engineering firm that is doing our study on the administrative costs. I think we've worked through most of those issues, and I just thank the staff for your efforts in getting that done.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if at some point down the line here, as we are fully organized and all the procedures and so forth are in places, is there a time that this board, and maybe it was already basically approved when we set it up, that those funds would be released to that treasurer into the account that the six county coalition has and then fully audited as has been specified at any point in time, because we are a legal entity within the state, or by governmental entity at the end of each year?
Yeah,
that would take some of the burden off from staff and working through these things. Of course, we want to be fully in compliance with state law.
So basically the funds would be placed in an escrow account? Is that what you're suggesting? Or on the
yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's... That's obviously not typically what's been done, but I don't know if that's maybe the treasurer or the attorney or the is anyone from the Division of Administrative Services in the audience?
For my part, Mr. Chair, this is my second or third meeting, so I don't have...
Your second official meeting.
A second official. I even have a permanent nameplate. Very impressive, right? So I don't have a deep history with this body. I just question what practical accomplishment we would make with an escrow account, because really the funds once dedicated by this board are in essence in escrow. We're holding those funds. They're earmarked, so to speak. I hate to use that term, but I'm not sure what the escrow would accomplish effectively.
That's true.
So it's a question more so than a comment, I guess.
If I might.
Commissioner McKee, please.
Thank you. You know, I think it's been mentioned a lot of these things are working out, and this isn't to be critical or anything like that, but we are a new organization, but we have had bills that went months and months and months without being paid. It's been a little difficult. I think we might could streamline the process. I think what some are asking for would be, couldn't we just streamline this process and authorize those funds into an escrow or whatever that proper way would be of doing that? Just like any other subdivision of the state of Utah, we are a legal, the Six County Organization is a legal political subdivision of the state. And just simply authorize those funds to, it was approved through the Lieutenant Governor's office. It has all its legal requirements, and simply just, I believe the board, unless there's some illegal reason to do it, has the ability to do that. If anything that's legal, I think the board's allowed to do.
Right. If it's a legal question, perhaps Mr. Roberts can offer an opinion.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that this entity is being treated the same as any other entity with regard to a grant, that the money is put into a separate account and payment is made by way of reimbursement. So that if the Impact Board makes a $100,000 grant to East Bluff, they don't write them a check for $100,000 and say, here, go spend it, tell us how it went. They have a process and procedure with regard to reimbursement because the state financial laws and practices overseen by the treasurer, John Reedhead, the head of finance, Kimberly Schmeling is the department's accountant with regard to that. Those state procedures have to be followed. And the process here is just like with every other entity that the board makes loans to. They're asking for you give us signed off saying we spent this money, and then it gets reimbursed. That's one of the reasons one of the ways that this board is able to not have 30 additional staff is because it goes through that process where the applicant certifies they spent the money where they're supposed to send it, there's another sign off, then they get reimbursed for that. That's the way all of them happen. It would be very unusual to try and say, okay, you know, here's your $5 million, go forward and send no more. I'm not sure if that would comply with the way the board requirements with regard to the way grants and loans are set up, the requirements under the rules. I'm not sure if that would pass muster under finance to do it that way. So that's very problematic.
Well, I would have any concerns where there might be the perception of special consideration given to an entity, any entity. So having said that, Commissioner Adams?
Well, this is a problem, and maybe you can help us solve it, Tom. We have people that submit bills to us and have payroll to pay, and there's a time when we could be out 6 months, and they haven't been paid.
It's my understanding there have been
some issues. And so any one of us, if our employer told us we'll get you paid, but we're out 6 months,
yeah,
on our payroll, or we're out 6 months on the bills that we've been paid. So it's not just a matter of submitting the bill and having the staff review it and it gets paid. The reality is it hasn't happened that way.
It is my understanding that the issue is whether or not the documentation is sufficient for state finance rules and regulations to authorize payment by a state agency.
That's my understanding as well.
And as soon as the documentation meets the financial or Department of Finance's requirements, it's paid. You know, and this the division can't waive or act contrary to the state law requirements with regard to.
We're not asking them to.
Right. So
we're not asking them to. We're just asking to have our bills paid in a timely manner.
And it's my understanding that those bills are paid as soon as the requirements of the finance department with regard to the specificity and clarity with regard to what the bills are for is met.
But my understanding is that did happen. There were some delays, as was mentioned by Mr. Johnson and Senator Oakland, but those have been resolved.
Not fully, though. I think there's a lot of progress that's been made, and so that doesn't become more difficult than needs to. I think a lot of progress has been made, but we still have some outstanding issues out there. And as far as Mr. Roberts, as far as the aspect, I think part of what we're talking about is more policy, and some of it is law. I'm not saying the board wants to, but should the board say we want to authorize a six-county organization? It is a little unique compared to anything else we have out here in the way that we do business. It's representing a large section of the state with a lot of the significant funds that comes in here. I believe if we have our policies and procedures that meet all of the requirements of state law, I believe there's a way of doing that. And so I think we probably should review this a little bit, and maybe something we can bring back and have a little more discussion on. But I, as long as we meet the requirements of the law, if it's something the board authorizes, then I think we should be able to do it. And that's just how I feel about it.
That is my understanding. I think that's the position of staff. The Permanent Community Impact Board is a state entity. It is subject to and required to follow the state laws with regard to accounting and financing and verification before monies are expended. Similarly, your staff, who happen to be employees of the Housing and Community Development Division of the Department of Workforce Services, are also required to follow that same Department of Finance rules and regulations before they can tell finance cut the check, because Kimberly doesn't write the check, Department of Finance does. So once those laws are followed, the check gets issued, and the staff is not, to my knowledge, saying, holding things up or treating anything differently. They're merely trying to follow the requirements of Department of Finance. And so, like I was saying, once those requirements are met, the checks get cut. And as you all go forward, hopefully it'll get streamlined and everybody can get better at providing the proper documentation so it gets paid quicker.
Well, that was our hope. Our hope was that this could be streamlined and we could get over that hurdle. And we kind of got things taken care of at the end of December. But now here it is February and we haven't paid our January bills. And so we're frustrated.
So
we're frustrated with the process.
Thank you. Mr. Hardy?
As a comment on behalf of the division, and I recognize what everybody else has said here, and I do believe a lot of progress has been made, and we are working through some of these. I'd say they're small details. I mean, I think we are getting through 90% of the process, and we're working through that last 10%, which is pretty remarkable for a new organization, and we're working hard to identify those areas where the documentation will line up and it will be a very easy process for us to process payments. But I will say that as the administrators of the fund, on behalf of the board's decisions, we would not be comfortable abdicating what we view as our responsibility, which is reviewing the payments in accordance with the statutes and laws that govern the board and approving those things to another organization. And it's not to say that we think less of Six County Infrastructure Coalition than anybody else. I think we would just treat them as anybody else. And this is kind of our role as staff to review these things and to make sure they're in compliance. We think we're getting there, and we're confident that we will work through all of these issues and make it a very easy process, but we would not be, I think we would be irresponsible to say we'd be comfortable in advocating that responsibility to any other organization.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner McKee, please.
You know, one of the things that we had talked about, and I'm a little unclear whether we got this set up or not, but when Chairman Walker was here, one of the things that he directed staff to do is we had talked about the aspect of having, as we mentioned, this is a little unique organization. We have individuals that need to be able to stay in rooms, fuel, essentially money for a credit card to be able to authorize and to do some of the business that we had to do. And he had directed staff to put some money in an escrow or some type of an account so that we could have those funds to be able to do that. Was that ever set up? Do we have that in place today?
Well, it seems it's a matter of definitions based on what Mr. Gamshin said, in that all of the CIB funds are basically placed in an escrow with a treasurer's fund, and that's what happened here, but it's not anything different than any other.
But under the way that the chairman had directed it, some of you will remember that conversation.
I'll say all of those things are potentially eligible administrative expenditures with the proper documentation. I'd say even us as staff members to charge time or anything to the Community Impact Board are expected to have that same level of documentation. So, you know, when we make purchases on our purchasing card and charge it to the CIB, it has to have certain documentation. So all those things are, you know, potentially eligible administrative costs, and with the proper documentation will be easily reimbursed, just as if internally as staff we were charging those expenses to our admin account of the Community Impact Board. So I don't see really any impediment there or any deviation from what was originally intended, other than we have to be responsible for that documentation, whether an internal expenditure or whether we're processing payments on grants for other organizations as well.
Actually, it is different, though, and I'm not trying to be controversial, but it is different because the Chairman Walker did direct and authorize and did state to put, and I don't remember whether it was $30,000 or whatever that amount was, to put in an account so that they could have the funds to be able to do that with. This is all, you know, on a reimbursement basis. I understand what you're all trying to say. As counties, you know, probably most everybody has a credit card. I would dare guess that there are state officials that have a credit card. I would dare guess when the governor goes where he goes, he's not having to submit money for reimbursement from the state. I think we're making a mountain out of a molehill here.
If I could, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gamshin.
We may be talking semantics a little bit when we talk about escrow accounts. It's commonly desired in different situations, whether institutionally or as consumers, that we place funds into a separate account to create that firewall, but that type of dedication of funds is handled typically most efficiently through accounting procedures rather than actually opening a separate account and moving the money. And so I would assume, not knowing exactly the procedures that staff follows, that these are accounting mechanisms. You mentioned credit cards. One of the ways that we could think about this, when we go and we do retail purchases with our credit card, 90% of the time we swipe the card. We may or may not even have to sign. And if we sign 95%+ of the time, we're not asked for picture identification. When asked for picture identification, we have two choices in how to respond. One is to be appalled at the inconvenience of pulling out our picture ID. And the other response is to say thank you for following policies and procedures and safeguarding my money and asking for that level of documentation. And I think this is a somewhat similar situation where staff and the office is following the law and procedures, and really it's protecting us all. And I trust, and I don't know a lot of the details in terms of these actual transactions, but I trust that staff will has been and will continue to be proactive to work with you on what exactly it would take, what steps are necessary in order to comply to allow for timely disbursement.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Let's go to Mr. Zanotti and then Eric.
Thank you.
I have a question for Mr. Hardy. Is this the only project we have a late payment issue, or you have had similar projects in the past?
Well, I'd say with all of the funds we administer, there's always a review of payments, and we have definitely asked for additional documentation from other entities. I won't totally get into most of the projects coming to the Community Impact Board are pretty simplified invoices for construction projects. When we get into the details of administrative expenditures, it brings a whole list of documentation detail that we need. So I refer more to a lot of the other contracts we administer in the division that carry administrative costs, and I would say same standard applies to all of them. We definitely asked for additional information or clarified those things. We've had entities that we've had delays in their initial payments, and we've worked with them. We've streamlined it, and it's very easy to pay them now because we're all on the same page of what those documentation requirements are. I certainly feel that's where we're getting with Six County Infrastructure Coalition. We streamlined a lot of it. I think, again, I'll go back to the 95%. I think we're there. We're working through that last 5%. I'm confident that we know what the documentation requirements are, and we're willing to help out Six County, you know, set that up in Six County Infrastructure Coalition in any way possible to help streamline those payments going forward.
So it has nothing to do with it being the new organization, new project, or misunderstanding. You have set rules already in place. So
that's set rules. I'd say with most new organizations, there's always a little bit of process of getting on the same page for detailed documentation. So I wouldn't say this is out of the ordinary, other than it's a very large project. I mean, it's a larger contract than we would have with most people, but we certainly can work through the details and feel like we're doing that and we're getting there.
Thank you.
Just Mr. Johnson, and then we'll go to you, Commissioner McKee.
Just an observation. I don't believe there's been any challenges on payment related to the electrical project. That is more of a standard bricks and mortar construction project that the Community Impact Board and their staff deal with. Where there have been some challenges is with the planning and administration on the initial $5 million. And my thought is just this, that some of these standard procedures that, although perhaps very familiar to the CIB staff, perhaps it would help if we were to sit down, meaning agents of the coalition were to sit down with CIB staff and just to kind of educate us on some of those things as how we can work better with the CIB staff and you know, explore the possibilities. That's the thought that's in my mind. And I just want to add this. I've worked with the CIB staff for many years. I hold each person in high professional regard, and I have always felt a warm personal friendship with each as well. And I certainly wouldn't want anything happening with respect to this to impair any of that.
Thank you. Commissioner McKee?
Yeah, just one other item I just mentioned to this. As far as any board member on the Six County organization, just so that for clarity, there is not any request for even to have a credit card. It's simply for our administrative people that I would make that. The other thing is that I would just say with this, part of it's not, it's how you do things. I know how, for example, in Uinta County, every expenditure that is on a credit card for any commissioner or our attorney's office, every expenditure is signed off by our attorneys. We do not have one expenditure that isn't reviewed and signed off through legal staff. So it's not a matter of, you know, some kind of do whatever you want to do and some loosey-goosey kind of thing. If there is one expenditure that's questioned, the attorney's office has the ability and the right and to bring it forth and forward because they review every single expenditure.
Mike, I think that the in defense of the staff, as and I understand this, this six county infrastructure coalition, is that this board and pay administration has always been for a particular project. I mean, everything that comes in is an eligible project, has some administration to it. We pay that administration relative to the project, and then it's done. It's gone. What is different with this is we're paying for the administration of your coalition. And so that isn't, in my mind, I just can't get it in my head that that is a project, that your infrastructure coalition is a project. You're doing projects under the coalition, but it's a whole different concept relative to administration. We have never, ever, in my time here, paid administration to a group. It's administration to a project. So I would hope he would be patient, since this was approved, that this be worked through. And I'm sure that's probably where the issues are coming out, is that what's the project? There's not project. We're just paying a coalition for administration of a coalition. So that's my observation, and I would hope that you would be patient with staff. Why, I think that's what they're trying to work through, as I'm hearing the discussion.
Well, what I'm hearing is that the board is completely supportive of the infrastructure coalition and what you're trying to accomplish. There have certainly been some growing pains. It sounds like your organization has experienced a little bit of that. It sounds like the state staff has experienced a little bit of that, because they haven't dealt, as Commissioner Jarrett pointed out, with something quite like this before. But from what I heard, Senator, those things are being worked through. Mr. Hardy's reported that he feels it's in the 95% range, but there's still 5%. I'm not sure if that has to do with attorney-client issues or with credit cards. I'm not privy to those details. I'm not sure if those are issues or not, if they're resolvable. I'm sure they are. You know, hopefully that doesn't take an obscene amount of time. Mr. Hardy, I sense that you and your staff are totally agreeable to working with Senator Oakland and his staff to get these things resolved, so that we are doing things according to state law, and that this organization can move forward. Are there other comments or questions from the board for the Infrastructure Coalition? Mr. Roberts.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Winterton raised an issue, and I think that Commissioner Jarrett sort of touched on it. With regard to the scope of the project and the scope of the $5 million grant that you gave to them, you did change the current scope, change the scope of work. So the project, they originally came in for that $5 million to do the inventory and do planning with regard to the eastern portion of Utah to develop and to look at what they needed, what projects might be good. There was an addition made to include administration in connection with that project in that study. And there is a question that I'm not sure the board has addressed with regard to the scope of that, and whether or not the board, when they gave the $5 million, intended to fund the six county coalition with regard to the development and presentation of new projects. There is a separate project that has been brought before the board with initial approval granted, the electrical project. It is my understanding that there might be bills that are being processed through the six county coalition with regard to work that was done on that project, legal work, and also people being reimbursement for coming up and making a presentation to this board on that new project. And the question is, did this board, when it gave the $5 million originally, intend to fund the coalition as an ongoing enterprise and to fund their development and presentation of new and different projects outside of that study? I mean, the study's not completed, this came on real quick. Did that $5 million, did the board intend that you would be funding the lawyers and the other people to develop a new project and make that presentation to you? And in my mind, that's a real issue that I'm not sure the board has decided. The board may well say, yes, we intended to fund this entity and be the sole source of funding for this interlocal entity and pay their employees, pay their lawyers, pay their accountants so that they can develop projects and come up and make a presentation, a pitch, and try to get additional funding. Because if and when that electrical project goes through, How is the accounting for payments made to the attorney in connection with that going to work? Is that going to be double payment through both the electrical transmission and the sixth county, or is there going to be some type of accounting? So I'm not sure if it's as clear as Commissioner Winterton indicated that he thought it was. And the question raised by Commissioner Jarrett also raises that same issue. Did we mean to be that broad and to fund this entity as a separate entity, and rather than the counties that created it, this board is funding it and its ongoing operations? That's a question that, just indicating to the board, that question of the scope seems to me to be an issue the board maybe want to resolve or ought to resolve as they go forward.
Mr. Roberts, are you suggesting we should go back and read the original minutes to see if the board had authorized the staffing or the payment of staffs and the advisors and attorneys?
That would be one of the things you would look at when you decide, okay, when we acted back, what, 2 years ago now?
September, yes.
When we approved this project, what was the scope of the project and was it meant to include that? And so you would look at the language of the grant, you would look at the language of the application, what they were talking about, and what the $5 million was supposed to be for. They put out a budget about how they were going to spend the $5 million. So that would be one of the indications that you might want to look at when you say, okay, what was the scope of that project that we gave them the $5 million for?
Okay, thank you. Call the question, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not sure what the question is.
We go back and review the minutes and find out what we authorized.
I just leaned over to Candace, to Gail, and I think we have reviewed the minutes, and there's really nothing further specified in the minutes, and Gail can confirm this for me or not. But if you want to continue the discussion now, I think that would be the premise we'd go off. There's no additional specificity added there, too. But if you want us to go back and do more digging, we can come back for a further discussion at another time.
Before we just leave it quite there, because I know we're about through, but I just would like to submit a perspective on that, and that would be this. I do believe it was certainly I felt it was the intention of the board. I believe it was very much the intention of Chairman Walker. As we had various conversations in the setup, the organization, the way that we put it, the way that we do it, the way that we give this the kind of organization that we needed to have moving forward. And so I don't know that I want to go into a lot of that right now, but I very much believe that that was the intent. I'm certain in my mind it was certainly the intent of Chairman Walker as we did that. I believe that was the feel that many of us had as we were having those dialogues and discussions. But I do realize we do have different people. There may be that not everybody had that same thought, so I'll put all that there as a possibility. But I guess I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Intent is certainly a difficult thing to gauge in hindsight. Especially when a number of board members are no longer here, including Chairman Walker. I think we do have a very clear scope of work. It is certainly lacking in great detail, but there is a budget that has been approved. There is a scope of work. From the report we received from Senator Oakland and Mr. Johnson, it seems like they are meeting the intent of that. We have addressed a number of issues, I think, as the board. And again, my sense is that the board is supportive of what you're doing and the direction you're moving in. My sense is that the Division of Housing and Community Development is supportive and willing to work with you to continue that mission. So unless someone has a particular motion or other concerns, I think we will express our gratitude for your time. Again, I know it's very valuable this morning, and look forward to having another update, perhaps at our June meeting where we have more time to go on this. And if there are still concerns and issues that are unresolved, we can certainly bring those to the board and seek resolution.
Great, Chairman, thank you. Chairman, yeah, we would certainly like to have these issues resolved and look forward to continue working with the board. Our offer to meet with staff whenever and wherever to be able to resolve those issues and work through them. And again, thank the staff for their great efforts. They have been great to work with, and we know that we're new and we're going to have to work through some of this stuff, and we're, there may be some things we still have to resolve. But the good news is we believe that we're going to be a tremendous partner for this CIB board and for all of the state, really, with the ability that this coalition is going to have to be able to do some things that really need to be done in the eastern part of the state where the coalition is represented by the members that are on that board. So we look forward to continuing to work with you. We think that we're a tremendous asset, and that we're going to, as our responsibility, our opportunities come to us, we believe that we're going to be able to enhance the ability of this board to be able to continue to do with the great work that you do. So, again, we just look forward to working working through these issues that we have. We thank you for the time that you've taken this morning to work with us on this. I know the board's time is very valuable as well, so thank you.
Thank you. Fadi, did you have a parting comment?
In consideration of what Attorney Roberts just said, I think it would really be beneficial to your coalition that you come up with a process or procedure that clarifies what is coming from the coalition, what is billed there, and what is, and he brought up the transmission line. I think that there could be some confusion as to what is to which. And when I remember the meeting, Mike, it was just a change of scope and data administration. I do not remember any particular detail relative to how that was to be managed. That might have been done in some of further discussions, primarily with Chairman Walker, but not in this board. So I think it would be good for your coalition to hammer out those and make them known to the board of just how you're going to address those particular intricacies of a project versus the coalition cost. So that would be my request.
Thank you. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would love just to hammer through the rest of this, but biologically I require a break from time to time. So let's take a 10-15 minute break and reconvene at that point.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Looks like we lost some of our numbers. I'm just glad I'm not a thespian. That would be a bad sign. I appreciate everyone's patience and input on that past topic. That's a, those are difficult discussions sometimes, and I appreciate everyone making it less so. We're on Part 6, Item 2, New Applications. In your red packet, there was a CIB application submittal list dated 2-1-16, deadline for the third trimester, 2016. Depending on your perspective, this sheet is either really good news or not. I got kind of excited. We only have 13 projects for the next trimester, so that is a reasonable workload for this group. I think it's reflective of our revenues and some other things, and so it's always interesting to look at that and ponder on what it really means. But those are the new applications coming up. And,
well, is there room for more, or is this the final?
The deadline has passed, so that is final.
Oh.
Yeah. So that is what we have to work through between now and our funding meeting in June, which means that under item number 5, when we talk about meeting dates, we may want to consider reducing those from our regular monthly meeting. So I'll let you ponder that as we move on to item number 3. Which is infrastructure funding set aside. It is the policy of this board that any funds remaining at the end of a trimester be brought up to the board for moving those excess funds into the infrastructure set aside. That does require a motion, and so the chair would entertain a motion to do so at this time.
I'd like to have a discussion on that if I could.
Would you like to make a motion or would you like to have a discussion?
I would like to have discussion before a motion.
Then let's have the discussion. Please, Commissioner McKee.
It would be my hope that we do not move those funds into the set aside. And let me just mention why I would hope that we do not is our revenues with when we put together a set aside, we were $100 a barrel plus on our revenues coming in. And when we first started that, it really had to do a lot to do with railroads and a lot of these large projects. And I'm not saying that we still don't have need to fund major kind of things. It would be a wonderful thing to do. But I remember there were a lot of people in a lot of our communities that was concerned that we were going to gobble up the funds that we have had intended for our community projects. And I, for one, at least, said my position was, I think our base type of things that we do for our communities comes first. And that is still my, it is still my belief that we need to be able to fund those items first. And one of the things, just to go with this, that helped us a little bit in this last trimester is, as you know, there's the sequestration funds, about 7 or 8% of the total amount of money. That money just came in this last cycle. And so it helped us out a little bit. I believe we've got, about $8 million in the regular fund, and I have to look at that again, but then a little bit in the bonus fund. But my belief is we're not going to have a lot of money to deal with in these next several quarters. If all goes well, maybe by the end of the year, the price of oil begins to improve a little bit. But this next few, most of the rest of this year, we're going to be in a pretty tight situation. And I would hope that we've got a little bit of reserve to move into our next cycles. And so I'm hoping that we don't put ourselves in such a position that we're unable to fund. And I do believe these base projects in our communities really come ahead of more of these other type of projects that we've talked about, even though I 100% support them. So that's just my thought.
I appreciate those comments, Commissioner. And I agree that we need to stick to the basics of what this fund was designed to do. I have a little differing view on the major infrastructure set-aside fund than maybe you do, in that I see it also as somewhat of a rainy day fund.
Yes.
That the board can take those funds at any time and apply those to an infrastructure project. And I agree that the intent was to do some major infrastructure projects, but by setting it aside at the end of every trimester, we make sure that money is available and isn't a dangling carrot for other groups that might have some interest in our funding as well. So just put that out there as another way of looking at it. Any further discussion on that issue?
Yeah.
Commissioner Adams, and then we'll go over to Greg.
It looks like we have about $6.9 million in the set-aside fund right now. Is that correct? Is that money available to both grant and loan if we want to dip into it?
Yes.
That is so, to do either. So if we did put the money, the excess.
If you set aside just.
You're not speaking in the microphone.
By design.
Yeah, by design, staff has arranged that all of that infrastructure funding is mineral lease funds, not bonus. So we'll try to continue to do that and make sure that the mineral lease amounts are the ones that you can set aside, and that way it is grant, 0% loan, or interest bearing.
That means the board has the flexibility to put that out in any way you
so we have are. We have $8 million in the mineral lease fund right now that we could put into the fund balance and then draw it out at any time as needed. Mike, are you saying you object to doing that, or that would give us almost $15 million in that fund to work that we would be available through the next cycle? Or
but let me just tell my thought on this would be, I think that money that goes in that fund, we all know that it's available. We can go and draw it. We could do that. But I think it's going to be enough in a special category. The board's going to be cautious about doing that. I think we're going to be fairly cautious about doing that. And my simple concern is, when we look at revenues coming in these next few months, they are going to be lower, much lower, much lower than what we've seen. This last year, they've been somewhat lower. Last year, we were dealing with $50 a barrel, pretty much. Now we're $29, $30 a barrel. Natural gas has fallen off a lot, and production is falling off. And so if we start dealing with half the money we had last year, wouldn't it not be nice, Bruce, I remember a discussion one time that you had, kind of had to do it, be nice to have some of these. We don't completely drain it out. In fact, you talked about phasing and some things so that we didn't find ourselves, you know, in a complete zero balance. If we had the kind of funds that we normally had, I would be all about putting it in. But I am a little concerned about our projects coming up in the next few months and pretty much the rest of the year. That's my point on there.
Yeah, I appreciate that perspective. And again, I concur 100%. You know, when we met a few months ago and oil was at $35 a barrel, we thought, well, that's rock bottom. You know, there's no way. I mean, who can believe that? And then it drops down to 27, or maybe it even went lower, you know, and again, it's bounced back. So we don't know what's going to happen a year from now. It could remain low or even go lower. And thus my thinking that a rainy day fund, you know, with our program income from the loans that we've made, can keep this fund alive. Fortunately, our next trimester, again, is fairly light, if you consider, yeah, that light. But $38 million is still a fair amount of money. So, again, I see this, if we put our excess money from this trimester, it doesn't appear readily available for, you know, the first trimester next time around. So I understand exactly what you're saying, and I couldn't agree more. It's just a matter of how you want to make that money available. So further discussion. Commissioner Adams?
Well, the money's still available either way. I think the board's going to have to make some hard decisions in looking at the next trimester list. Most of the requests are grant money, and I think we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to be careful about how we deal with each application and look at needs and wants again, and really try to fund those projects that are a need. But I guess I view that fund as a little bit, like somebody already mentioned, as a rainy day fund, and it's available. Yeah. It's available all through the semester. I don't really care whether we put it in the rainy day fund, fund balance, or leave it where it's at. To me, we're starting out with $15 million anyway, Mike.
I guess, Bruce, I'm okay with it as well, as long as the board's willing to tap into it.
Yeah.
The concern that I have is it somehow becomes a sacred cow that if we find that we need it, that we shy away from, and that's my...
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Potter?
Thank you. The two things that, as you've talked about it, and I understand those dynamics, but I also think that by taking it there and setting it aside, it really does help us be disciplined. Again, I've been the one on the roads, but we're not going to be able to pave every road in the state of Utah. We just are not. And so let's look at really what those true impacts are into our communities, even going back to some of the memos and things that were put out before I was on this board, 2005 and before, on what is a marginally impacted area. If we put these funds aside for major infrastructure and we can still use them when needed, I think we really have the best of both worlds, plus the fact that there may be those opportunities that come along that further infrastructure would help us continue to receive new revenue funds into this, into the CIB funding. And so I think that it serves its purpose still, because we may see that it would definitely benefit any of those areas where that infrastructure was needed in order to generate perhaps additional revenue for the CIB, for our counties, for the state. So mm-hmm. I still think it's very prudent to do that as long as we know that, yes, if there's something major there that comes along, we have the ability as a board to look at that.
Commissioner Mattson?
Got a question on the timing of the availability of a rainy day fund. Do we have to agendize that, or can we see how we're doing at any one given meeting and then decide to tap it?
Because of the way the board is set up and it goes by trimester, you can still review all of the applications. And then when you get to the funding meeting, it will be on the agenda if you want to bring that back to allocate it to projects that you have considered to be.
We don't have to wait between trimesters then?
No.
Okay. No. All right. So I think it makes sense to be able to make sure that we've got that for access and utilities. So.
Further questions or comments? Commissioner Winterton and then Mr. Roberts.
Well, I do think that it would be wise to move it with the understanding we can go after it. I look back this past year and the decisions and the projects we've reviewed, we've become a little tighter on and not as free with the money. And if it's left on the balance there, then they think it's available and that we should be able to fund all these projects. So it just comes back to the board again that if we continue doing what we've been doing, we will have money there for those projects that pass the smell test.
That's it. Mr. Roberts?
I was just going to remind the board that the board did adopt an administrative rule with regard to the major infrastructure set-aside fund. It's R990-8-8, and it does sort of govern. It is a rule, so you're required to follow it. But it does sort of indicate that at the end of each trimester, you should consider whether or not to pour any monies over into this fund. And similarly, it provides that the board at any time may reconvert the money from that infrastructure fund back into being available for any project at all.
Yes. Thank you. Commissioner Jarrett?
Well, again, we set precedent. So I would draw the board's attention to what our sheet in the packet shows now, that in this last trimester we funded almost $26 million. That was with totally mineral lease and bonus. So that's what came in, that's what we funded, and we only had an $8 million surplus. So adding those together, you're still not, if that same money revenue were to come in this next trimester, we would not even be close to funding the total amount in this next trimester. So then we set a precedent of always going to the rainy day fund if, in fact, you want to fund these. So I would think in this particular case we may not want to, just because of the value placed on the projects coming in this next trimester, even though we can still say no, but we're not even close if we count the revenue we had in this trimester plus what's left over. It's not going to cover them. So that would be my caution.
And Claudia, again, just kind of restating this, but this trimester, because of the sequestration funds, we got quite a bit of money that had been earned all year on top of what we would get. We were more, for the most part, $45, $50 a barrel compared to, you know, the revenues that will be coming now that will be, what, 40% less or even than that. So,
Candace, you had a comment?
I just want to remind the board that last trimester it was a zero balance.
That's right.
When we ended. So if you put this, if you set this aside, will be a zero balance again. And we were able to accommodate it. But I take it's a good point that Commissioner McKee brings up, because we did get sequestration funds. We only get that once a year.
Once a year.
Mr. Damshin?
Being the newest member of the board, I will continue to cash in on my privilege to ask stupid questions. Mm-hmm. Or make stupid comments. I just have a couple of thoughts. I would be concerned, and perhaps it's not a valid concern, that while we do want to discourage, or we may want to discourage, marginal applications, would we, through this practice, discourage applications with merit? I would hope not. Can we assume that all potential applicants understand where this board sits and its intent in terms of its use, intended use, of these sequestered funds. So that's just a question or a concern I guess I would have. I would also point out that I don't consider, if we can refer to this or think of this as an earmarking practice, I would say that earmarking is not a fiscal best practice. It absolves decision makers of making those hard decisions, session in and session out in the case of the legislature, or meeting by meeting in the case of this board. I don't have an objection or a position one way or the other, but that's my two cents, that I don't know that we necessarily want to absolve ourselves from making those hard decisions, or that we want to put this flow of funds onto automatic, if you will. So just some questions and thoughts for your benefit.
So, you know, just trying to be team player here. I don't have any problem either way we do it, as long as we don't have some kind of a hard cap that we can't go and grab, you know, if we have an openness to look at those funds, if we find a project or projects that we need to. I think we are in the rainy day period. I think this is the rainy day period. I don't believe most people believe prices are going to stay this low on the long term. We've certainly historically had a lot higher. I think this is the rainy day period that we're in.
Just a matter of how long it storms.
Yeah.
Let's go with Commissioner Potter and then Mr. Galecki.
One last thing, and then if we're ready for a motion, I'll be glad to do that too. But the one thing that I would point out is that we do, as the Carbon County MBA, we have a project on this next trimester. It is a district court building, and I only bring this up because it's a $13 million project, $13.9. We're only coming in for half of that. We've been able to find the mechanisms through the private market that we can actually, with the help of the CIB, take half of those funds out into the private market, secure them from traditional financing, if you will, and be able to make this entire project work. Well, that's creative, I believe, on our part, and also being a good steward in a period of time when the revenues are decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of asking for $13 million for a state building, we're asking for half of that in a loan that will be paid back to the CIB. I think that that's the kind of message that we send as we take these funds and set them aside, as we all look at our finances a little bit differently. We all look at the projects that come in a little bit differently. I think we still have to make those hard decisions on really is it an impact, is it a want, is it a need. But I think that we can look at other ways to do that. I'm hoping that that will come through when we bring that project to the board. I think that it'll make a difference in how that we look at some of the issues. This isn't a water project. It wouldn't work for that. It happens to be this particular scenario. But I just point out that there are other methods for communities to develop and to take care of some of those needs other than always running to the CIB. And I know Mr. Galecki had a...
Let's go to Mr. Galecki. And
short and sweet was that based on the amount of discipline that it provides, but also the flexibility, I was going to make a motion that we move the funds.
We have a motion to move the funds. Is there a second?
Second that.
I have a second by Commissioner Potter. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 The balance available. Yes. Any opposed?
Just a question. How much is it to the dollar?
Well, I don't know exactly. It's approximately $13 million.
Okay.
Well, so you're just going to have to move it out of the mineral lease, or else
it's just...
So
it would be less than that?
So it would just be the eight.
It's the non-bonus money.
Eight.
The non-bonus money.
The mineral lease.
So it will be about eight then?
Eight.
Yep, just over eight.
Thank you. That was a healthy discussion.
The motion would be the non-bonus money.
Yeah.
Which would be the eight.
Right. Agreed. Next on our agenda, number four, is a report from the Rural Planning Group. At our previous meeting, the Rural Planning Group was refunded, but there really wasn't adequate time for them to report on what their plan is moving forward, and the board did request that they provide greater information on their activities, and so they're here to do so, and so we'd invite them forward at this time.
Good to be here with you. Thanks for
listening to us here for a second.
Introduce yourselves, please.
Yes. My name's Kyle Slaughter with the Rural Planning Group.
But I'm Paul Moberly, Rural Planning Group, obviously.
We've obviously gone through a lot of change. We've lost a lot of weight since the first of the year.
Not personally.
Just kidding. Just kidding. We've obviously changed a lot as an organization, just in personnel over the last several weeks. So we've taken the opportunity to take a look at where we've come and where we think we need to go to help rural communities in the best way possible, as well as support the board and its mission. What you have in front of you is a draft of kind of our direction forward. We wanted to provide this to you and get any feedback that you may have. Obviously, we don't expect you to look over the whole thing right now, but as you have questions or comments, we would be happy to address those if you have those in the future or in this meeting. There's a few things I wanted to talk to you about. First is our vision and mission, a little bit about who we serve, our annual goals, the current projects that we have, which we touched on last time, but we'll touch on those again in case there are any questions, and then the involvement of CIB, because I know that's been a question that has come from board members in the past. So first thing, our vision and mission, if you flip to, in that pamphlet, page, or it's right there on the front page on the executive summary, apologize. Our vision for rural Utah and the things that we're trying to accomplish is to increase self-reliance, self-determination, and preparedness for communities so that they're more resilient to the swings and sways that we see in the economics and other issues that the rural communities face. Right now, obviously, oil's down, and so we're seeing some issues with communities out there as they, you know, try and facilitate the services they've always provided to their citizens. Coal's been under attack for quite some time, and that some of the communities in Utah's coal belt, as I affectionately call it, face kind of a continued decline and the questions that they'll face moving into the future. This is the group of people that we're really trying to help, the people who are trying to have long-term assurances and providing services for communities in the long term. We do that through the four pillars that we highlight here: leadership support, planning assistance, supporting the Community Impact Board, and rural research. So going along with that is kind of the communities that we work with. I mentioned some of our more energy-intensive communities, the communities that are extracting and putting money into this board. There are other communities as well. We're doing research on zero-growth communities. We've mentioned this in the past, if you remember. This is a group of communities that are not seeing any population growth or that are declining in their population and in their revenues. We've been collecting data over the course of the last several months and trying to identify the communities that are struggling most. And that's kind of going to be the highlight of who we're working with, are these groups of communities that are struggling and facing issues. Now, this isn't all we do. Obviously, the majority of the things that you've seen come from us are study-based, so the oil study, the coal study, and those sorts of things. That's kind of the stuff that we'll continue to do because we feel like it kind of paints the big picture, and then these other things fill in the gaps where the private sector, there may not be funding for it from the communities. So that kind of highlights who we're planning on working with, and there's more information in the packet as well. Moving on, we wanted to briefly highlight our current projects. As I said, we've got the Zero Growth Planning Project. That's something that we'll be finishing up in April. It'll come out as a report similar to the coal and oil study, highlighting what we found and the strategies that communities can use in either kind of dealing with decline or fighting it, depending on what strategy they decide to use in approaching those issues. We're continuing with tools and micro-studies. These are issues that we've heard about from community leaders that they aren't sure how to address, and quite frankly, they don't have time to spend a lot of time researching. One, for instance, is code enforcement. We just finished a little micro-study on how to do a code enforcement plan for very small communities who might not have much in the way of resources. One that doesn't require all of the time of the community leader, but also doesn't require anything in the way of funds or very limited funds. We're doing other things to help simplify the processes that these cities have to go through. Another example would be annexation. In talking with the RPPs, they've mentioned that there are several communities who are unsure exactly what steps they need to take in that process. So we're trying to highlight, here's kind of the flow of what you need to get done, and they can seek other assistance as needed. We're finishing a general plan for Oak City here in the next couple weeks. We have a few rodeos. Those are the we basically go into a community for 2 or 3 days, and we'll look at everything in the community and highlight some of the priorities that they should have as they move forward with their capital assets and also as a community. There's 3 of those that are lined up, and we have a goal of doing 4 of those this year. Those are in Tropic, Naples, and Monticello. And then CRMP, we're continuing to support that initiative through website support and making sure that they have what they need on their end to put information out for the counties that are working on finishing their plans. And then we're continuing with the vlog. Those are our current projects. There are some that are in the works. I don't want to spend too much time talking about those ones, but what we hope to do is send out an email to you basically highlighting what projects we're planning on working on. We know that you guys all have day jobs, things that are more important than spending all of your time wondering what we're up to. But what we'd like to do is send out a brief once-a-month report that highlights what we've completed, what we're working on, and what's coming up in the future. That'll give you as a board an opportunity to review those things, review your investment, essentially, in our group, and then provide guidance as needed. And that'll basically give you the opportunity to say, hey, you know, I'd like to talk about this, and we can put it on the board minutes, and we can talk about that project specifically if you'd like. And we feel that that's the best way for us to then make sure that you guys have a say in what projects we work on while continuing the work that we've been doing in the past. Is there anything I've missed, Paul? I'm trying to be brief. So.
Well, I mean, we're willing to, again, present to this board at any time, yeah, if you require that or would like us to. We just thought that, you know, given time constraints of these meetings and, you know, no one wants to sit here past lunch listening to us. So we thought that medium would be appropriate and would hopefully provide that communication medium that we could have going forward.
So your intent is to report every trimester?
Monthly.
Monthly.
Monthly in an email to the board. Again, like you were saying, the current.
Then you'll make a physical in-person presentation
as requested, and then also once a trimester.
At least once a trimester, exactly. Or as requested.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And that way, we're not taking all of your time, but we're also providing you updates, so you know exactly. There's no questions on where we're working, but we'd love to field any questions that you have for us moving forward. Whether those come right now or if you have questions from the packet, and we'll be finalizing those things as we hear back from you.
I've got a couple questions.
Go ahead.
Like the email, I think, is a great idea.
Great.
However, if there is something that we want to hear about it, it should be out early enough that we can be on, that they can be on the, you know, if somebody requests them to be on the agenda.
Right.
So how early do they need to have that out before to, you know, like let's say you read something.
A week before?
Yeah. That was our plan, is basically every Thursday before our meeting, you'll get an email from us. And we'll make it fairly brief, and if you want more information, you can shoot us back one, and we'll update you as much as you'd like.
So is that early enough to get it on the agenda? So do we have to read it Thursday?
No, Candace just needs 24 hours before the meeting.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I was just...
Twice?
If it goes out with the board package, then it needs to be 2 weeks before.
And then, perfect. Another question is, you know, we always see general plans come in, and how is Oak City different than so many of the other cities that come in with a planning?
That's a fair question. Oak City was, they're one of those communities that really hasn't seen much growth. There's not really any revenue sources in the community. Neither Paul nor I were on the initial meeting, so I'm not sure exactly what all of the criteria were for its selection, but it seems pretty clear after working with the community that the funding capacity isn't really there for the town. In addition, as we work with Oak City on completing their general plan, we're going to be using what we learned from that to continue developing best practices and additional information we can provide to small tech community leaders as they look at, you know, updating their general plan, reviewing their code, and other things like that.
Then I guess this is a little bit of a joke, a little bit, but, you know, it's called a planning group. Is it more of a planning couple?
I guess so.
Well, there are three members of our team, honestly. I mean, Keith is.
And because that being said, you know, I can see that as far as leadership support, planning assistance, you know, and then, you know, current projects, it all seems like a lot of work. And
One of the things that we're doing right now that's been very helpful is reaching out to students and using their assistance to help with some of the research on the back end of these projects. We've got two right now that are coming online. One is the annexation project. Another is assessing O&M. And those sorts of things allow us to spread our resources. We know that there's going to be questions on as far as capacity goes with just the two of us, obviously. We're trying to address those in the most fiscally responsible way for the board. You know, we lost two really great employees, and so trying to make determinations about what the next step is and what the best step forward is difficult, and we're trying to make sure we do that not in a knee-jerk reaction, but in a planned, consistent fashion that allows allows the group to move forward.
I guess personally, I find a lot of value in more of the upper level things as far as the planning, the zero growth, some of the micro tools, as opposed to potentially getting bogged down in a planning document.
And our intent is to not seek out general plans or other master plans. We receive, you know, I guess, questions from private sector organizations about that, and we can understand why. If the board directs us to do one, or there is a feeling like, hey, maybe this is a good place for the rural planning group to do, you know, a general plan, that's typically when we're going to take one of those opportunities.
Okay, Commissioner Mattson.
Candace, help me. How much do we invest each year with our funds, give or take?
How much do we invest?
Spend, I mean.
Well, spend, but we can see between grants and loans and all the rest of that. Are we a $100 million business?
Yes.
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah.
Could the planning group take a look at some metrics, you know, that would help us understand, you know, what the weight is, with, you know, from a value-added standpoint, and then some, and then an evaluation of are we doing any good? And if so, how do we take a look at that? Because I think that would help us sort some of this stuff out.
So you're saying ask for another project for them instead of the metrics? No, I mean, I
think they could do it fairly easily with the data that's available, but at least at some point, and through some economic modeling, if we're investing too much in roads or not enough, I think those metrics would help us understand the task that's before us here.
Yes, we can definitely take a look at that.
Okay.
Paul's a spreadsheet master or ninja. I'm not sure what the correct term is, but it's one of those two.
Well, good. Microsoft? I'm just kidding.
Mr. Zanotti?
Well, first of all, to answer Commissioner Mattson's question, I personally have attended five of these projects that CIB has funded, and talking to those people, it just appraises the Lord. Everything is just great, and they're appreciative, and the money is well spent. Every penny of it. That I can testify because I've been in there some of the grand opening, groundbreakings. But my question from you is, this pyramid is good for the weight loss plan, yes, as you elegantly stated. But to me, based on the oil prices and coal and gas,
yep,
your long-term goals and annual goals are pretty much the same. What if we had by miracle some sort that price would go up? Can you change for now the long-term goals and the annual goals to short-term goals rather than annual, because there's not much of a distance with the annual and the long-term based on the economy we're facing?
Yeah, that's something we can definitely take a look at.
Because tomorrow, if something changes, then you can have a long-term. But right now, we concentrate on short-term. What if we have a $25, $26, $16?
Right.
What if they shut down the coal completely? What is your short-term goals at this point?
Yeah, that's definitely something that we can go back and take a look at, in integrating those more.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions for the Rural Planning Group?
I've got a general question, another one. If West Texas crude is $30, what's the net wellhead price in Juana County?
Well, we used to have about an $18 to $20 a barrel discount that the refineries charged because it was black wax heavy and because they could. That's down to about $8 or $9 a barrel now, I believe. That's the latest I've understood. So.
So we're netting somewhere north of 20 then.
Yeah, at $30. And that seems to grow and shrink. Like, historically, it grows and shrinks with the prices. So if we see prices go back up, that'll grow marginally with prices going back up. But, yeah, that's about right. It's tough for the producers out there. So.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. We look forward to more great things. Appreciate all the work you're doing on behalf of the board. Our final item per the approved agenda is next meeting dates. And as was previously mentioned, we do only have 13 projects, which really could be done in a single meeting. So one possibility is just to have one meeting, and we could even have that be a funding meeting where we just funded those 13 projects, reviewed and funded at the same meeting. We could break it into two meetings, one meeting where we reviewed the majority of the projects and then a second meeting where we reviewed the balance and then funded everything. Or we can meet every month and review a project at each meeting. My proposal would be the nature of these projects do require review from our partner organizations, DEQ and such. And in order for them to have time to review the projects, it would help if we did bypass the March meeting, which leaves us with April, May, and June to look at. So we could do a meeting in April, skip May, and then have the retreat in June be the final meeting. We could skip April and May and just do the June meeting. My proposal would probably be to have an April meeting and a June meeting, just to balance things out. And I know staff doesn't like the April meeting, but but it's at the board's discretion. Any thoughts, conflicts, preferences?
Just a question on that, Keith. As we know, the way these funding cycles go, we don't know. If we do it the way we typically do it, we see at the end of the funding cycle what money we're
That's correct,
got to work with. In April, we're not going to really quite know what that money is.
Correct.
And maybe there could be some tentative approval. Either that or we just try and see what we do right there at the end. But
We could definitely do it all at the end. If it's a retreat, we'd have all day if we needed it. But, again, I'm not trying to persuade the board one way or the other. I just don't like meetings we don't need.
I am. Review it in May.
Review in May and then final fund in June would be Candace's.
So the proposal is that we have our next meeting on May 5th here at the multi-agency state office building. Is anyone opposed to that?
So forego March and April, no meetings in March.
Yeah, correct. All right, so our next meeting will be May 5th here. Having resolved that major issue, motion to adjourn?
No.
Wait. Other schedule. Do we need to vote on that at all?
We need a motion for our next meeting?
Well, it's a change of schedule.
I would vote if I were you.
I'd prefer not to vote, but the chair will accept the motion to hold our next meeting on May 5th here at the multi-agency state office building.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. Mr. Galecki moves. Is there a second?
Second. We are counseling March 3rd and April 7th. So
yes.
So the next meeting will be May 5th.
Correct.
I second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Zanotti, for the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, before we adjourn, looking at the meeting schedule, I would like to
I would like to make a proposal, if I could.
Please.
This is for September. Normally, that is the first, and I see that Candace does have a question mark on here. So normally, that is September 1st. I would wonder if we could do that on September 8th, because we do have our energy summit in our conference center that the board helped fund, and we certainly want to invite everybody to come to our energy summit. I mean, I would think everybody here would want to be there. So it's an invitation to all to come.
Okay, so please change your proposed meeting dates to September 8th. Any other concerns? Was there something?
No, that'll be here, but his energy summit
is Vernal. On September 1st, you'll be in Vernal, yes, but not for a CIB meeting.
That won't be in this building, though. It will be at the...
Someplace else?
It will be...
We could have that actually in Vernal.
We can go back to Vernal 2 weeks in a row, yeah. Or maybe Duchesne.
So where is it?
The September 8th will be a different place, you said?
It will be here. It
will be here?
Because we can't get this room on the second Thursday.
Oh. We would make the conference center available for a CIB meeting.
Yeah.
Duchesne would make theirs available, too.
I will be accepting bids for the September 8th meeting.
Tom, do we need to vote on...
First in line. So
we're already going to Vernal.
So do you have the building for September 8th then?
I have several proposals.
I would make a motion that we meet in Vernal on September 8th. Second? Ron, I'll help you sometime. Come on.
How long is your energy?
Well, we have Carbon offering, Vernal offering, Duchesne offering.
I was waiting for Nagy to offer.
Hey, September, I can be any place, but if you want to come to St. George, I'd love to have you.
So there's a motion to have that meeting in Vernal.
I'll second that.
The bigger man. Thank you, Commissioner Winter. Gets a second. So all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so it's proposed that we do that in Vernal. Any other business to come before the board, Mr. Adams?
On the retreat, It talks about it's held at Inn at the Canyons. Candace, Inn at the Canyons is where we have a block of rooms.
Yeah.
But the actual retreat will be at the Hideout Community Center down at the golf course.
Oh, where the board can hide out.
Well, you'll like it. The other thing is Bluff is about 40 miles down the road, and I would like to take the board down there for one of our evening meals. Many of you remember Steve Simpson was on the board a few years ago. He has a restaurant down there, and I don't know how many of you have ever had a Navajo taco, but we could go down to his restaurant and eat either a Navajo taco or whatever.
Actually, they have very good food there.
Yeah, they do. And then we're trying to make arrangements for the board to go through the Bluff Fort experience in Bluff that evening. Along with, I think, have you been there, Naughty? It's really an amazing thing. And then we could even go over, if we take Shippo with us maybe, or Tom or somebody, we could go over and look at the graves that they dug up or whatever else you want to do in Bluff.
Still going to be open?
They might. But that's... Yeah.
At least we bring our horses.
If you want to bring your horses, we'll go horseback riding as well. I've got four I can provide. I can probably get some more. Lynn Stevens probably has six.
So is there is Uber down there?
Uber. Uber horse or Uber car?
We all go in separate.
Bruce
cars
is developing that application.
If Lynn Stevens brings any horses, be really careful making contentions about your horse riding abilities, because he might put you on a difficult horse. And I'm just saying. No, I've heard stories.
Nice. He has mother-in-law horses, and he has other horses.
I don't have anything for the chairman.
Be nice to Lynn if you're riding his horse.
Okay.
But yeah,
that sounds like a
Candace, we're probably going to have to take our own vehicles to Bluff.
Got a horse named Uber.
That's a great name for a horse.
I just want to express to the board my appreciation for your service. This is a huge time commitment, and you all take this very seriously, and it's much appreciated. We do great good for the state of Utah and its people, and it is much appreciated. Having said that, motion to adjourn. Thank you, Mr. Winterton. Meeting adjourned.